And comedian Simon Taylor recently found out he was going to be a dad. And then he was told he might not be a dad. And then he was told, actually, he probably will be. He wrote a show, a stand-up comedy show about it, about his potential fatherhood, and has now brought it to the Fringe. He joins me now to tell us about it. Simon, thank you so much for joining me.
Good morning. These are not comedy hours, but I'm happy to be here.
Yes. And tell us about your show that you've got.
Well, yeah, it's like you described. I was... I had a one-night stand. There's no nice term for that, is there? a fleeting romance. How about that? A very fleeting romance. A 24 hours or less romance. And a month later, I got a message from her saying that, she was pregnant. And I shocked and freaked out. And like, oh, my goodness, I don't have a house. My parents are still alive, so how else do you get one? Like, there's just all these, like, worries. And then she messaged and said, well, there was another guy around the same time, so
it
could be you, or it could be him. And so it was essentially 9 months of, limbo, trying to work out if it was me or not, and just preparing to be a father on the chance that it could be.
So did you find quite a lot of comedy in that time?
The funniest bit is me, like, struggling. So it's easy to laugh at myself and how, you know, crazy it got for me. I became obsessed with essentially obviously becoming an obstetrician in my own way off the internet. So I think that the funny bit is how I handled it. So it was an intense, real situation, but I'm only making fun of my stupidity.
How did you handle it? It sounds quite bad.
I became obsessed with understanding contraception and understanding pregnancy. Like, these are all these things I didn't know. I didn't know things about the menstrual cycle. I didn't know the failure rates on contraception. Like, here's the oddest one, right? We know that condoms aren't 100%, right? But they have a 2% failure rate if you use them correctly. But there's this thing in contraception called typical use. And typical use is what most people do because they mess up and they're drunk and they, you know, the condom's too big or it's too small or, you know, they don't wear it. All the mistakes you can make. But all these little things that you don't know, and you get a bit of a false sense of security. And so it was, if anything, it was a good refresher in studying things that should be common knowledge. So people come see the show and then afterwards go, yeah, I didn't know any of that. And it's crazy to me because sex ed is like, these are the ovaries and the fallopian tubes and, you know, about once a month, but we're not actually told practical details. There's no practical sex ed. There's just the theory of, and then a baby comes out and you're like, oh, okay, cool. But you don't really get the details of what you should be responsible for.
And were you responsible?
In what sense? We're gonna have to go a little more detail.
Did you have the right intentions? Or,
oh, throughout the process? Well, listen, put it this way. I told the mother, if it's me, I'll absolutely be there. You know, like, I'll be emotionally and financially responsible, mainly emotionally, but we'll see how well Fringe sells. But there's an initial shock. See, I was wary coming into the show. I didn't, in all honesty, I wasn't one of those guys who were like, oh, I don't want anything to do with this. I really wasn't. And I really wasn't blaming anyone, and I was genuinely shocked. So I kind of want to reflect that shock in the show, but I also don't want to, you know, pretend that I was some sort of jerk, because I wasn't. I was, as soon as I accepted I could be a dad, I was supportive of her and responsibly preparing for that possibility. But that's not as funny as, So just for the listeners, I wasn't being a jerk to her. I was absolutely supportive of her. But the craziness of not knowing for 9 months is what kind of drove me crazy.
Yes. And it's very recently that you've got the results.
Yeah, about a month ago I got the results.
And are you willing to reveal what they are?
Yeah, in the show. Come along. Come along
Leave
and find
us
out.
Hanging.
Yeah, find out.
And what did she think about this whole show? Has it got you into trouble?
Well, that I'm going to have to reveal that in the show as well. Yeah, I'll have to leave that one. No trouble. It'll give you that answer. No, there's no trouble. But yeah.
Mm.
I also, it's important in the show, I don't really talk about her because I think it's important, like, in terms of just like someone's personal life. So all I say is she told me she was pregnant, and then I don't mention her for the rest of the show, right? Because I think it's important, at least from my perspective, that when I'm telling a story about this, I'm telling it from my personal perspective, and I'm not here to make a comment on other people and other people's lives or behavior. So it's really just to focus on me and what I went through.
Mm. Had you considered being a father before?
Yes, but I think the timing is about being a comic. There's really a little insight here. It takes about 10 years to get established as a comic, like financially established, about. Some people do it sooner, some people later. But you find your groove around 10 years on average. And so I'm about 7-8 years in. So I'm only starting to, you know, get my consistent bookings in places and get a consistent crowd and have a following and whatnot. So I always imagined I wasn't far off. I wanted to maybe in 2 or 3 years, but then you got to find someone and so on and so forth. And that's tricky when you're traveling. So the real answer is, yes, I'd always thought about it, but it would seem like this distant possibility sometime in the future when I'm, you know, when I'm rich and famous. But the reality is like these things are unexpected and they can just happen whenever.
I guess they say like if you're waiting to be prepared for a baby that you'll never have one.
Right. Yes, yeah, that is true. No one's ever prepared. I sometimes speak to, you know, fathers in the show. I'm like, so what's your advice? And most of them are like, oh, I don't know, keep it alive. Like that's the best they can do.
I just think it'd be so scary to be a father. Like, were you scared about bringing it up?
No, that was the exciting bit. Mm. When I accepted, like, okay, I could be the dad. Let's accept that I am the dad, right? And take that possibility on. That's when I felt happy. That's why the show is called Happy Times, because there was this moment, there was this 24-hour period where I was like, I'm going to be a father. And that was the happiest I've ever felt.
Wow.
Mm.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. It's true. I think that it is true that men can have that, no, get rid of it. That is true. But it is also true that, you know, parenthood and fatherhood is the height of human emotion. And if you accept it and take on that responsibility and have that connection, then that's an incredibly beautiful human experience. And so I had that.
Mm. I'm speaking with comedian Simon Taylor about his friend's show Happy Times. And I always thought that comedians sort of make up stories and lie to get their jokes. But I think it's great that you've used your own experience.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the reality is it wasn't planned in a couple of senses, but I do gigs every day. And I was living in New York at the time, about the 7 months of last year when this was all unfolding. And I would do gigs 2 or 3 times a night. And so I couldn't think of anything else to talk about. So it wasn't that I was like planning to do it. It was just that I can't like, you know, be reading about ultrasounds all day and then go into a gig and go, yeah, so accents are weird. Like it was too trivial for what I'd been thinking about all day. So as I was doing gigs every day, this is where I was just like, I'm not going to be able to talk about anything else. It's consumed me.
Yeah, it must make it so much more engaging.
Yeah, but also terrifying, you know, because you're an OCD starts to develop a little bit with these things. You know, I think I've read every baby website ever. So, yeah, I feel like I know a lot.
Mm.
Not everything, but I know a lot. Yeah, a lot more.
Have you had some funny feedback, like people wanting to give you advice on, you know, how do you use contraception?
The funniest feedback, well, the funniest feedback, because in the show I go through it all, and the funniest feedback is people like, didn't know any of that, right? Uh-huh. Yeah, people just, and also just medical practitioners, because in the show I say, is anyone in, you know, working medicine, and there's doctors and sonographers and midwives, and I find that midwives know everything. Midwives are amazing. They know their stuff, like down to every detail. But GPs don't, like, unless they're in obstetrics, they don't know those specifics. So they really are general practitioners or even sonographers. Sonographers will, you know, operate the machinery, but they don't necessarily know the ins and outs of, and I hope I'm not offending any sonographers, but there was just, perhaps you do know your stuff, but there were a couple of sonographers in who afterwards were like, oh yeah, we didn't know that stuff about pregnancy dating. So, yeah, not to rubbish the medical community, but I'm just saying there's specific knowledge that not everyone attends to. And so it's available, but it's not, if it's not relevant to your particular practice in medicine, you don't pick up on it. And it's very useful information, we'll put it that way.
Yeah. I'm sort of not surprised that a lot of people don't know that much about sex ed. I went to a Catholic school and it's just...
Same.
Yeah, it's just wrecked, wasn't it? Like the amount of education that you
just
get.
Just get married and it'll work itself out. Yes. Yeah, that's the education.
Yeah, but how are you finding this show with this kind of like real life experience compared to your past jokes and humor?
Well, I've always drawn from them, but it's just never been as poignant. I mean, my other shows have been about, you know, dating or breakups or, you know, things like travel adventures and things like that. There's usually, my shows are about some emotional event. This is just the biggest one I've ever gone through. So,
yeah,
it's quite an epic show just because the gravity of the emotion was quite high. Yeah.
Because you found a unique spin. What do you think you'll do next?
I don't know. I think I'll be celibate for the rest of my life, so I might not have any more shows.
Yeah. But, yeah, how are you finding the Adelaide Fringe and how many times have you been here before?
This is my 8th time.
Wow.
I love the Adelaide Fringe in a row, so I haven't skipped one. I'm all about it. I had this dream, let's call it a nightmare, the other night that it was like 2 nights ago. I dreamed that Fringe was over and I was so sad. I just woke up going, oh no, oh, it's okay. We're only midway. So I really like it. I even, like, when I was in New York last year, I was like in the middle of, you know, apparently the greatest city in the world. I'm just going, I can't wait for Fringe. So I genuinely love it, and I love Adelaide. And what I've pushed myself to do in at least the last couple of years is go, like, get out of the Fringe bubble and go do other Adelaide things. So I've been, you know, heading down to Victor Harbour. And last year I took my parents to, I flew them over and took them up to the wineries, and I've done Clare Valley. And so I'm making sure I'm actually getting around South Australia a little bit.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. What's your favourite thing to do here?
I love the museum here and the art gallery, sorry. And that, because I just love that it's modern and classic art all in the one room. And I've never experienced that before, and I really enjoy that. So I like the quiet places, like the galleries and stuff like that. Because my job is so high energy and social that in my downtime I'm kind of withdrawn. So to balance it out, So bookstores and galleries.
Yeah, and as you've travelled all around the world, how does Adelaide audience compare to everywhere else?
They know their stuff. You guys have seen so much, and you're very discerning applause from an Adelaide crowd it feels more rewarding than applause from, I don't know, a Perth crowd.
Oh, that is so nice.
Yeah, yes. Well, it's also, being a bit unfair to Perth. But they're just happy to have you. Where Adelaide, they're like, well, we're happy to have you, but we want you to be good too.
Yeah, got a lot of competition.
yeah, you guys know your stuff.
Yeah. Do you get a chance to go around and see other shows while you're here?
Yeah, I tried to. I saw Kitty Flanagan. I really love her.
Yeah, me too.
Man, I laugh so hard. Her performance is so good and so smart. I really loved her. I saw Lawrence Mooney in Malcolm.
Oh, yeah, that would have been good.
That impression is so good. It's actually really interesting to watch because he's doing the enunciation of Malcolm and the audience is just like mimicking him or echoing him because he'll just say Ocean and the audience is going, what, Ocean? It's so, that's a really funny show to see. And Husey, I like Husey a lot. He's kind of my, he's my role model to some degree. I really like how he's a good example of what we were talking about before. He takes real stories. So that this is someone I've learned from. It's just like, it's literally, he's so good at just taking these small world things that happened to him, like an interaction with someone at the shops, and turning it into a 3-minute comedy routine. And he makes it sound like he's just chatting to you, but man, there's so much in like structure to this joke, and it's such an art. Because if someone's telling you a joke and you can hear, oh, he's giving me the setup and the punch, you can hear it's a joke. With Husey, it just sounds like he's having a chat to you, but there's a joke hidden underneath that you can't see. And so that's a very nerdy analysis of comedy. But Husey is a great example of just of a storyteller that has really well-refined jokes underneath.
Mm. Yeah. Can you tell when a comedian's lying?
To some degree. Yeah, you can tell if it's just clearly a joke. Mm-hmm. But yes, I think so. I think I can tell to some degree if a story's made up or twisted a little bit. But that's not the important bit, as long as it's entertaining.
So true.
Yeah.
And so you do learn quite a lot and take a lot of inspiration from other comedians?
Yeah, absolutely. Fiona O'Loughlin is a big inspiration to me because she can tell these longer stories, which I really like, that they just wouldn't fit in 4 or 5 minutes. I really enjoy her. In America, I really like Sarah Silverman. She's starting to do storytelling a lot more, where she came from a background of one-liners. So I actually liked seeing her transition into longer-form stories. And there's a good special on Netflix by Ali Wong, and she's pregnant throughout the special, and she doesn't mention it until about 30 minutes in. So you're just seeing this pregnant woman do stand-up, and you're like, in the back of your head, you're like, well, tell us about the baby.
Elephant in the room.
Yeah. And she doesn't mention it until 30 minutes in. And I thought that's really funny as well. So, there's a lot of incredible comedians that you just you get inspired by. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Simon, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. Quite an in-depth chat. I enjoyed it.